Hello and welcome to the Library Cafe, a weekly program of table talk with scholars and librarians about books, ideas, and the circulation of knowledge. I'm Thomas Hill. Our guest today is Perry Willett, head of the Digital Library Production Service at the University of Michigan Library, who is talking with us by telephone about the Google Books Library Project, as well as about the University of Michigan's part in this undertaking to translate the book holdings of many of the world's largest research libraries into digital form for universal access. Welcome, Perry.
Great to talk to you.
For those listeners who aren't familiar with the Google Print Project and Google Book Search, I wonder if you could start by just giving an overview of the project and its goals.
Sure. Google Print was the original name that Google gave to this project. Somewhere along the way, they changed it to Google Book Search. And their goal is to digitize millions of books that are available in libraries around the country. They started with 5 libraries when this project was announced in December 2004. And it's been expanded to, I think, 13 now. And they include libraries such as Harvard, Stanford, Library of Congress, Oxford, and other libraries in the U.S., U.K., and Europe.
This is an undertaking that is in the history of, well, history or record-keeping, really momentous, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. Just the announcement itself changed the nature of the discussion in digital libraries. We had been working for a decade or more, digitizing parts of our collections and making a very small dent in the overall number of books that we could digitize. And just by announcing this project and their goal to digitize millions of books, it really helped us think much more broadly about the possibilities of a digital research library, a real digital research library, and think differently about how we approach our work and just what the future might look like.
It puts me in mind of some of the great plans to build universal access systems to recorded information, including the Library of Alexandria, and in the 20th century, especially Vannevar Bush's 1945 Memex machine, which was a plan to build what he called a complete planetary memory for all humankind by essentially constructing a computer interface to a huge microfilm collection that would contain all the world's literature. And at the time, and looking back on it, it seemed like science fiction. So are we catching up to our utopian aspirations regarding the dream of the universal library?
Yeah, it's always interested me that Bush's vision of the Memex came right as electronic computing was being invented itself. And so from very early on, this has been a goal of people involved with computers. And for Bush, perhaps the main goal. And we have worked with that vision since then, but perhaps really not believing it was true, I think, until Google made their announcement.
In terms of scope, how many titles are we talking about in terms of the University of Michigan share in this?
Well, Google will digitize our entire collection, so we will digitize some 7 million volume from our collection.
Can you tell us how far along the project is in terms of years or numbers?
Well, when the project was announced in December 2004, it was projected to be a 6-year project. We think Google is on track to meet that goal, which is pretty amazing in itself. We've seen a lot of improvements in productivity in the past 2.5 years, and it seems like they will be able to meet those goals.
Now, libraries have been in the business of format conversion, especially for preservation purposes, for a long time. One of my very first jobs as a library employee in the late 1970s was to collect materials for microfilming in the Beinecke Rare Books Library at Yale University, where we had a book cradle camera stand set up in a small room off the reading room, and the camera operator would film several hundred titles there a day. And there have been small focused digitization projects underway in libraries for a good 15 years at least, mostly using photographic machinery not very different from what I remember at the Beinecke, really just substituting digital cameras for 35mm SLRs. But what Google seems to have brought to the table here is the technological ability to scale up the numbers of materials one can safely scan in a given period at a given rate?
That's right. The technology itself isn't anything new. We've known how to scan books, and it is similar to, or it's been developed from our experience with microfilming over the past 40 or 50 years. But what they have really added, and one of their main achievements among many, has been the resources they could put into a project like this to be able to have the goal of scanning millions of volumes. Nobody has done that before.
Now, you are digitizing materials in the public domain, but also copyrighted materials?
That's right. We're digitizing everything in our collection, and that includes materials in copyright. And in Google Book Search, people can see up to 3 snippets for a copyrighted work so that they can have some indication and get some context when they do a keyword search to see if it's worthwhile for them to track down the book.
Yeah, this does seem to me on first glance to be entirely within the realm of fair use in that it serves to provide an index to material without reproducing so much of it as to impinge on the copyright owner's ability to profit from the work. This function certainly is an incredible boon to researchers in that it extends what we do as librarians when we catalog a book in a rather amazing way.
That's right. And I think the value of that for researchers, it really can't even be measured. You'll be able to do things with Google Book Search that were simply impossible before. You'll find access to materials that you didn't know about before.
Do you have any anecdotes along those lines about people doing research or getting back to you and telling you that they were able to do things that they weren't able to do before?
Well, I can tell you from my own experience, I've been interested in an obscure Belgian artist, early 20th century artist named Frans Mazarel, who'd worked in producing books that were called novels in woodcuts in the early 20th century. And these were books that tell stories using just pictures, woodcuts, or other kinds of graphical illustrations, and no words. And they're not children's books, they're meant for adults. They tell stories.
Something like a graphic novel, then.
They're precursors to graphic novels. And Mazarel really pioneered this genre. And I became interested in this, 30 years ago, and have been looking for research about this. There hasn't been a lot written about him. These works were very popular in their times, but they're almost completely forgotten now. You can still find them in used bookstores sometimes. But he sold hundreds of thousands of copies in his lifetime. It has been very difficult to find any research on this using traditional methods of indexes or following up footnotes or card catalogs or other means. But fortunately, he's got a fairly unique name. Just by typing that into Google Book Search, I can find hundreds of books that discuss his works that I didn't know about before.
That's quite amazing. It seems we really are talking here about exactly what we who work in libraries have always been about, and that is to increase the efficiency of the quest for knowledge and information.
That's right.
Do members of your own community at the University of Michigan have access to all materials?
Currently, the access is no different for people at the University of Michigan than it is for the rest of the world. We're planning for the day in which we will negotiate with publishers to allow access for people at the University of Michigan to copyrighted materials or to allow access to materials that we've scanned under the Section 108 provisions in the copyright law that allow us to digitize and make available brittle works for preservation purposes that are out of print.
And that's been done for some time now. For microfilm, I know universities will often make copies of their brittle books, make microfilm copies, without any problem in terms of copyright law, because they're replacing books that are really falling apart. So
that's right. It's a well-established provision in the copyright law.
In terms of what is being digitized in your collections, does it include non-book printed materials such as maps, musical scores, newspapers, political pamphlets, broadsides, and other materials?
Right now, we're only including printed bound books, so for the most part, none of that other stuff that you mentioned. Although, if, for instance, scores are in a bound volume, they would be included in this.
What about the visual materials that appear in books, including foldouts and maps and that kind of thing?
Oh, certainly. Oh, yes. Those will definitely be included.
And what about periodical literature, bound periodicals?
All of that's included as well.
That's quite amazing then, too. You know, given the efforts put into indexing, this will certainly augment that, especially for historical periodicals, I would expect. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the opportunity to do keyword searches across these millions of volumes, whether they're journals or monographs, is just remarkable.
One of the common anxieties I sometimes hear expressed by educators, including librarians, is that the more we make intellectual material available online, the more students are inclined to ignore material that is not online or that can't easily be found online. So I'm talking about the so-called invisible internet as well as publications only available in physical print form. Do you think this is a cause for concern?
Well, I don't find it a cause for concern, but I do think it's probably true that students will gravitate towards materials that they can find online because they'll be able to find them more easily than they can on the shelf. But that doesn't worry me too much. I think that our goal has always been to provide access to these materials, and we are simply improving the methods by which people can get access to these materials.
It seems to me this is more of a pedagogical problem than anything else, and it's something that can be addressed in the classroom and in the library as well by instruction. So can you tell us how the University of Michigan became involved with Google and why?
Well, this predates me. I've been here for 3 years, and the project was underway but not yet announced when I got here. But it's my understanding that Larry Page is an alumnus of the University of Michigan. His parents taught at Michigan State, and he came here as an undergraduate and studied in the College of Engineering.
And Larry Page is one of the founders of Google?
That's right. He's one of the two founders with Sergey Brin. And at an alumni meeting, some kind of alumni dinner that was, I think, held to honor him, he mentioned this idea that he'd had, and somehow it got back to us in the library, and the conversation went from there. Apparently, while he and Sergey were both at Stanford, this was actually one of their first ideas for a company, for Google itself, was to digitize Stanford's library. So it's been an idea that they've had for a long time.
They were thinking big right from the beginning, it seemed.
That's right, yes.
I know the University of Michigan was a pioneer in digital library development long before Google came along. Apart from the fact you were one of the founders of the Digital Library Federation, the University of Michigan has been a partner in certain commercial ventures, such as the Early English Books Online Text Creation Partnership, where the contents of Pollard and Redgrave, as well as Wing's short title catalog of materials printed before 1700, is being digitized and sold to libraries through subscription. Is there any overlap here, and will the Early English Books Online project still be something an institution will want to buy into when the Google project is nearing completion?
Well, I think so. Let me give you a little more description of the text creation partnership that was formed for this project. When ProQuest, well, I guess they were called Bell and Howell at the time, released its Early English Books Online, there wasn't any full text available for the works because they couldn't OCR this old typeface. There was no OCR software that would work with this old typeface. So essentially you could search the bibliographic information that was available through the short title catalog, but that was it. So libraries, including the one here, said, well, gee, we really would much rather have the full text if that were possible. How about if we banded together to have these works transcribed and encoded? And Bell and Howell, or UMI, or later ProQuest, saw the value in that too. So I think there are about 150 libraries that have come together as part of this text creation partnership to fully transcribe and encode a subset of the works available in Early English Books Online. So there's about 150,000 books in EBO. As part of the text creation partnership, we are transcribing and encoding about 25,000 of those. So it's still a very large project, but a subset of everything that's in Early English Books Online.
Well, will Google duplicate this then? In that the Google project is digitizing older materials, right?
Well, they're not digitizing microfilm, so the microfilm won't be digitized. They will be digitizing works that are in the Early English Books Online from Oxford and other libraries, but they're going to have the same problems with OCR that ProQuest had and find that the results are just as bad. So I think there are a couple of important points here. One is that I think there's still going to be a place for this kind of additional work to just having page images available, that libraries will want, for certain parts of its collection, to have more than even just raw OCR. And second, that we can band together in these consortia to do this kind of work ourselves. And this is, I think, a great model for how libraries can band together to do important, very large tasks.
Now, contrary to the fears of some early critics of this venture, the University of Michigan and presumably the other partner libraries haven't signed over their rights to do as they wish with this content. Is that true?
Well, there are some provisions. We have our agreement with Google available online, and people can look to it themselves. There are some restrictions on what we can do with the content. We're getting copies of everything digitized by Google and making our own access system to it. We can't share it with other commercial partners, so there are some restrictions on what we can do with it. But on the other hand, it seemed like a fair trade-off for us.
So even if Google were to change its business model and begin charging for access to this material on its own servers, or if Google were to go out of business, say, the partner libraries would presumably continue to make the collections publicly available at no cost to the reader?
Well, one of the provisions in our agreement is that we are allowed to include it in a multi-institutional repository of some kind. And there have been some talks about just what a multi-institutional repository might look like and how it might work.
So with so many other areas of the public domain being threatened, and I'm thinking here about recent discussions we've had on the Library Cafe concerning art permissions, corporate telecommunications threats to network neutrality, and what essentially is the legalized piracy of federally funded research by unscrupulous scientific publishers, Google seems to have rather dramatically positioned itself on the side of the public good in bucking this trend, hasn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think they have some nice features in their interface to it that allow people to grab an entire PDF of a work in the public domain to use however they like. And so that was something they added after they initially brought out Google Book Search. So I think they're receptive to ideas in the community and hearing how people want to use these collections.
Apart from the fact that you're making the text accessible through optical character recognition, are you marking up the text at all or encoding it?
Well, actually, none of it's encoded. We're just getting straight text files. As you can imagine, with millions of volumes going through potentially billions of pages, all of this has to be automated. So what they can do is, for instance, determine the page number of a particular page or try to determine the page number in an automated way. And it sounds like a small thing, but it actually is pretty important for people following citations or looking for beginning of chapters to be able to tell what the page number of any given page is. But since they're doing it automatically, they're not always going to get it right.
Presumably you have some way to provide for feedback and quality control in general?
That's correct. On Google Book Search, there is a feedback form, and our access system has a feedback form.
Now, thinking about long-term preservation, how are these records stored? Are there plans for some distributed network of repositories that would ensure survival of this material across national boundaries in case of war, political disaster, or natural disaster?
Well, I mentioned the multi-institutional repository before, and part of that is a desire to increase the preservation robustness of the repository itself by having the material stored at several locations. Whether it's multinational or not remains to be seen. But at least within the U.S., I think we are having some discussions about that currently.
And talking about political boundaries, I noticed Google just announced a Chinese character capability for Google Books and that it was adding a large collection of Chinese material to the collection. And Google has been subjected to a lot of criticism lately about its special relationship with the Chinese government in that it allows the Chinese essentially to censor out anything it doesn't want to appear in China to a user using the Google China search engines. And this seems to apply to Google Book Search in that if you do a comprehensive search in Google Books from the main site under the words Cultural Revolution, you get a total of 11,000 plus titles. But if you do the same search at google.cn, you get a total of 28 titles. And we've talked about the utopian side of this technology, but there could be a dystopian side also, couldn't there? In that the new search capability combined with mass digitization of printed works could allow a government to identify texts it wishes to censor with an efficiency that you never could have had before. So my question is this a cause for concern, since this effect flies wholly in the face of everything this project is otherwise about in terms of the democratization of information?
Well, there's a long history of attempts at trying to suppress ideas, and it's a real concern. And I think as the technology advances, people will try to use it for their own goals. And I think you're right that it's possible, and it may be happening now for all I know. We shouldn't be naive about these things. But I guess I believe that at the same time, we've seen that people are able to, as technology develops, that people are able to use it to go around whatever blocks and attempts at suppression that governments put up too. So I have a lot of hope that if these materials are made available, that people will be able to find a way to get to them despite attempts at suppression.
Yeah. Do you keep track of relational information about these texts, such as rights information?
Currently, we've worked with our general counsel's office, the university, to develop our own rules that we use to determine the rights and access of any particular volume. And so as we bring a volume into our repository, we use the information in the MARC record to make a decision about the rights of the particular volume. Sometimes we don't have complete information in our MARC record, and so we take a rather conservative line and decide to suppress it until we can upgrade the record to give more complete information. Stanford just last week released this database of copyright renewal records, which I think will help a great deal in this task.
And you have a GOIP database as part of your infrastructure?
We have a GOIP database attached to our access system that tracks where people are coming from. Our legal counsel has determined that people outside the U.S. have slightly different access to materials published outside the U.S. than do people inside the U.S. So we have to track where people are physically located when they use our collection.
And this is because of differences in copyright laws between various nations?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I noticed that one can relate place names contained in the books in the project to Google Maps, and I've already seen an enterprising GIS experiment performed on the web where someone at their home computer wrote a script that plots on a map of the Earth mention of these place names in the database via variables such as century. So you can see, looking at the map, what places figure in the imagination of the literate world as the centuries wear on. Are there other ways of mining this data for patterns that would not have been possible before?
Well, even in Google Book Search, they have mashed it up with Google Maps, and you can see the place names mentioned in the particular volume on a map, and clicking on the little thumbtack will tell you what page number this place name occurs, which seems to be a nice feature. But yeah, I think you can begin to imagine a lot of different kinds of mapping that you'd like to see about places mentioned or the history of publishing or other ways you could examine this data.
Yeah, grammatical and linguistic analysis comes to mind. So have you thought about how this project, as well as similar projects, are going to affect what we do as librarians and how they're going to affect the function of libraries generally? I mean, obviously, we will no longer need to be primarily concerned with the storage and circulation of widely available print materials. So where does that leave us?
Well, I think we're still in a state where a lot of these materials are in copyright, and we will need to be sure that we have access to print editions of those works in our collections for our researchers.
Well, for me as a librarian, the other side of that is that I no longer have to collect retrospectively if there's something already in the database. If I'm just thinking in terms of use, and I'm not talking about collecting something for special collections because it's valuable in and of itself.
I think that's right. I was a bibliographer in English and American Literature at Indiana University for a long time, and looking through used book catalogs and other things, trying to find 19th century publications that we didn't have, seems a lot less important now. If the work is available online, people have very good access to it now. And so that function of libraries the function of trying to collect those materials now doesn't seem nearly as important. Libraries have talked for a long time about cooperative collection development and other kinds of collaboration without having actually achieved much in that realm. I think this presents a much better opportunity for libraries to truly collaborate in their collection development. and we'll see whether we can now, this time, actually achieve it.
As librarians, we have to think here also about our physical holdings, since our perception of the meaning of these holdings changes dramatically in the light of their virtual counterparts. And my question here is, what happens to the book? Does it actually take on more aura, become more valuable, or are most books something that we as scholars will come to feel we can do without, a superfluity that is expensive to house and very expensive to provide access to, assuming we want to maintain accessible stacks and not simply warehouse our collections in off-site storage facilities?
Yeah, I think books are used for a lot of different things. They include information that people want to get at, but they include a lot of other things as well. It's hard to know how people will use books in the future in light of this development. But I do think that we will continue to find value in printed books, and they'll continue to be published, and libraries will continue to buy them for some time.
Do you have any thoughts on how this new environment will affect the practice of researchers within the library or outside of the library?
Well, I think both stand to benefit tremendously from this project, that the opportunity to do keyword searches across millions of volumes to find references in works that were otherwise obscure or completely hidden or inaccessible will change the way that people do research and give them access to things that were simply undreamed of before. I think it privileges a certain kind of research. I think that people looking for information or research on particular people or places or historical events will find this extremely useful, if not the single tool that they use for this. People researching concepts or historical developments or other less concrete topics, I think they probably will still find it useful, but not quite as useful as typing in a person's name and finding references to all of the books that have something to say about that person.
Yeah. One thing I noticed it does, it brings historical materials to the fore in a way that when you're paging through a library catalog, you don't see it quite in the same way. I don't know if it's because I tend to gravitate toward the more recently published materials, but you know, when you pull the page up on Google Book Search, you see the title pages of the books that come up with whatever search you do, and oftentimes they're 19th and sometimes even 18th century materials, and you become curious about them, of course, whereas if you had seen their entries in the catalog, you might be more inclined just to skip over them and look for something more recent, especially if you can just browse through them right on your screen there in full text.
Well, I think that's right. I think it does privilege these older books because people will have immediate full access to them.
Yeah, I notice myself that things that I'm used to as a librarian with some understanding of the history of books, having looked at lots of books, you know, over a long period of time from different centuries, that everyone has this same access now that I do almost immediately, and that you get to know, you know, what a 19th century title page or what 19th century print looks like as opposed to 18th or 17th century print. And this is the last question. How do you think the project will affect the way we view the internet? Since one of Google's stated intentions is they hope that the project will make the internet more akin to a true universal library by adding traditional cultural content. And so the hope is to make the internet more intelligent.
Well, I think they'll be looking for ways to start integrating some of these projects, such as Google Scholar, Google Maps, some of these others, into more integrated research tools so that people will be able to map research projects in ways that they couldn't before, or see them across a timeline, or see not just books but articles that have cited those books. You can think of all kinds of ways that this information could be integrated in extremely useful ways.
So I want to thank you, Perry, for taking the time out to talk with us on the Library Cafe today.
You're welcome. Great to talk to you.
Our guest today has been Perry Willett, head of the Digital Library Production Service at the University of Michigan Libraries, who has been talking with us about the Google Books Library Project and the University of Michigan's part in that project.